But one day you're taking by the lake, watching the waves go up, watching the waves go down, thinking that's anicca. And one day you become so still that the lake vanishes. It's not there anymore. Neither is the land surrounding it with the trees or the sky above it. Everything has disappeared. And the lake is not supposed to do that. That is anicca. Things which you never thought could vanish now disappear. And you realize those things which were vanished, that's what you took to be permanent, even happiness, even a self. And you've never seen it before, because it's always been there. You've never seen it vanish. In the first jhana experience, your body vanishes, and with it the five senses. Not even a doctor understands the body. And the five psychologists does not understand the five senses. They think they do, they've studied it, they've cut it up, just like the tadpole studied water in the lake. How can a doctor understand what the body is when they've been living in a body as far as they can remember? In the first jhana, your body has vanished. It's not there anymore. Your five senses have disappeared. Totally. Now, for the first time, you understand what this body and five senses really are. And unfortunately, you cannot, with all the knowledge, all the learning, all the hearing of Dharma talks, everything else, you can't understand what this body is. Even if you can teach the Abhidharma, you don't understand what these five senses and body are until it vanishes in a jhana. And just like the tadpole becoming a frog, that is a very strange experience. The jhanas are like nothing you have experienced before. Like the frog would say to its friends, first time out of the lake, this is really nothing like I've experienced before. And something which you've never seen before has gone. That's how we understand what the five senses are. Number one, they can't be me. They've gone. Number two, even in the first jhana, it's so much bliss. Why? Because a whole heap of suffering has gone. Your five senses and your body. If you can understand that, you will no longer be interested in sex, in movies. Even the best sex is such pain compared to when all of the body vanishes. Watching a beautiful sunset, hearing Beethoven's Fifth from the Berlin Philharmonic, which is used to be one of the best, I don't know who is the best now. Things which are so incredibly powerful to your five senses. The highest happinesses and pleasures you can get with these five senses. Once the five senses vanish, just realize how much suffering, pain, irritation that is compared to when the five senses vanish. When you want to understand what dukkha is, how can you understand this body is dukkha when you don't really know what it is? It's always here for you. When it vanishes, you can't miss it. And anicca, dukkha, anatta, it's gone, it can't be me. That's only the first jhana. Five senses and body, seen for what they truly are. Second jhana is, even the first jhana, some people can see, the second jhana, you can't mistake it. In the second jhana, the will has vanished. You can't do anything anymore. You can't choose to come out of the jhanas. You can't make any decision to watch this or watch that. Something which has always been there for you has totally disappeared. Chaitanya, will. Now the sankhara of will. The major sankhara is Chaitanya, said the Buddha. That is no longer there. Now you may think you understand choice, will, chaitanya, but you've been surrounded by that like the fish has been surrounded by water. You cannot understand it. Yes, sometimes you exercise chaitanya, sometimes you don't, but it's always there for you to use or not to use according to your chaitanya. Now it's gone, vanished completely. Now it's one of the weirdest states to be in. You're stuck, peacefully, beautifully, happily, unable to move. Chaitanya has vanished. That's why the second jhana is called Samadhija Piti Sukha. The happiness, the joy, the stillness, real stillness, which you can't move if you even, well, you can't want to move. That's why you don't move. That's why you're incredibly, perfectly still. That is actually the perfection of Samadhi. That's why it's Samadhija Piti Sukha. You can't be more still than that. And when you come out afterwards, that was even weirder than the first jhana. Something has disappeared, which was always there for you. Will. It's anichit. It was regular, always there. Now, like the lake vanishing, the jhana has vanished. Now you can understand what it really is. This thing which is always moving you, making you go from place to place, making you think, plan, remember. And the amazing thing is, you see how much dukkha it is. The reason why the second jhana is so blissful is this terrible chaitanya, this will, is now stopped. Freedom from this, I call it the prison guard. I gave a simile yesterday. Just like life is being born in prison, lived all your life in prison, and thinking that prison is fun. So you visit from one part of a prison to another part of prison. You go to Narayana, you go to Edakalanda, you go to Colombo. You're just visiting different parts of the prison. You know, you find a nice girl or a boy and you have sex in the prison and have a nice family and board in the prison. You educate yourself. You have lots of fun in the prison, but you're in the prison of the five senses. And then you have this guard who never lets you sit still. Always saying, get up, go to work, do this, do that. Come on, go and learn jhanas. Go and learn Abhidharma. Go and become a monk. Go home and teach the Dharma. Go and write a book. Go and organize a retreat with Ajahn Brahm. Go and do something. Have you noticed just how much that will never allows you any peace at all? But you think your will is your friend. It's your cherished possession. That's actually one of the most important things you think you are. I am the one who decides to meditate. I am the one who decides to come here. I am the one who decides to put my hand up and ask a question. I decide what I eat. I decide where I go. Is it you making those decisions? Where does all your choice come from? Of course, you've read many times, the Buddha said, you know, the sankhara anatta. The sankhara, the will, is not yours. How many times have you read that? But you don't believe it, do you? You can't, because you haven't seen it. That will has to vanish. And then you understand what it is. In the second jhana, afterwards, that blows you away, big time. Never again. Unless you're really dumb and can't see it, but if you're in the second jhana long enough, you can't miss it. Never again will you ever think that you're in charge of what you do. Basically, it's not your fault. It's also, you know, you didn't do it. That's why I keep saying, I give Dhamma talks, I'm totally out of control. It's not Ajahn Brahm teaches the Dhamma. I've been totally conditioned. I teach because Ajahn Chah conditioned me. But I say, why do I say the things I do? The jokes, they were conditioned by my father. He'd always tell terrible jokes. So I remember when I first gave a talk like this over in my monastery in Perth, someone gave it the title, Why Ajahn Brahm Tells Silly Jokes. It's not my fault. It's not my chaitanya. I was conditioned like that by my father who tells silly jokes. So it just conditioned my will. I got no choice. I have to tell silly jokes. Why do I teach the Dhamma? Not my fault. Ajahn Chah brainwashed me to teach like this. not my fault. If I teach, you know, with similes and examples, with jokes, with lively talks, please, Venerable Metta-Vihari, never praise me. It's not my fault I teach like this. I learned this from Ajahn Chah. He brainwashed me. And his teacher brainwashed him, Ajahn Mun. And Ajahn Mun's teacher brainwashed him. And you go right back, it was the Buddha. He started all of this. So if I teach the Dhamma, I blame the Buddha. It's nothing to do with me. It's not my will. It's totally conditioned. So number one, you see that you aren't the one who makes all these choices. That's fascinating. Can you believe that? No way. After second jhana, or third, fourth, you see that so clearly. And also you see this will is so much suffering. You know, choice. People actually, psychologists have proved this. Olden days, when I was a young man, I'd go into a shop. It was so easy to shop. There's hardly any choice. Even if you want to buy some tea, only about two or three different types of tea, and that's all you could buy. It was so easy, just buy it and just go. Nowadays, you know this, how many different estate teas can you get in Sri Lanka? And then you've got oolong tea, you've got Lapsang Soothong, you've got green tea, you've got peppermint tea, you've got fusion tea. There's whole shelves of tea in the supermarket. That choice sucks. It's so much suffering. Choice. Psychologists have seen that. As far as silly jokes go, I remember this person who came to Australia as a refugee from the Middle East, a very poor country. And he went into the supermarket and saw they had potato powder. This little powder you can buy in the supermarket, you just add hot water and you get mashed potatoes. Now, mashed potato powder. I'm sure they've got that in the shops in Sri Lanka. Mashed potato powder, just add water and you get mashed potato. Another part of the supermarket, milk powder. You know, he said in the old country he had to actually grow potatoes and actually dig them up from the ground and peel them and boil them and mash them to get mashed potatoes. Here in the West you just get powder and you make it. Milk powder. Just add water and you get milk. You have that in Sri Lanka, I've seen it many times. Said in the old country you had to get a cow, you know, milk it and then you get the milk. Another place, so instant egg. You can get like powdered egg, add water and you can make yourself an omelette. But what really surprised him when he went to another part of the supermarket and saw baby powder. In the old country you had to have a wife, have sex and wait for 9 months to get a baby. So if you're sinner, you have to explain that afterwards. That's why I tell bad jokes. It's not me, it's my father said things like that. Now, this is when you find out what the will is. Nothing to do with me. And you also find out when you don't have any will at all, the bliss of the second jhana, the will has been suppressed, disappeared. That is so much happiness because the will is suffering. It's not whether you will right or you will wrong. All will is a pain in the ass. It is suffering. It is dukkha. And of course you realize, it's vanished. That can't be me. When these things vanish, what is really stands out is the anicca dukkha anatta. Which means never again will you take this will to be anything than an empty process not originating from this person called Ajahn Brahm. You know it is a great cause of suffering. Which means that you can let this will go at any time. Because it's just like, here we go again, a piece of shit. If I have a piece of shit on my hand after wiping my backside, I will wash it away straight away, as soon as I can. And for me, the will is like a piece of shit. I only have to use it when I have to. But if I have anything left when I start meditating, I wipe it off. I never keep it in meditation. I know how much suffering it is. Instead, I let go. Which means no will. Then you're peaceful. Then you're free. People meditate and use their will thinking they can get jhanas. It's obvious when you see this. Will is a problem, not the solution. You let go of the will, jhanas happen. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. Now also through the jhanas, you know, the third, fourth jhana, especially arupas, they're fascinating because you know what's happening in the arupas? You know, your sixth sense, manovijnana, is vanishing. Bye-bye mind is disappearing. Even in the four jhanas, you can see your mind getting more and more thin. Consciousness is vanishing. Do you understand what the mind consciousness is? This thing which knows? How on earth can you understand it? Because it's always been there for you. Just like a fish in water. How can you understand what mind consciousness is? Abhidharma won't help you. Philosophy won't help you. When it starts to vanish, that helps you. When the fish goes out of water. Now, of course, the consciousness isn't vanishing totally. In that sense, when the tadpole becomes a frog and jumps out of the water, not all of the water has vanished. It's still wet on the outside of its body. But enough water has vanished to know what water is. Just like even in the jhanas. Enough of the consciousness, the mind consciousness, the jitta of the mind has vanished to understand what consciousness is. Number one, the less consciousness you have, the happier you are. That's why third jhana, something has disappeared. That part of mind consciousness called pity. It's fallen away. You've got less. And that's happier. Blissfully happier. When pity has disappeared. And the fourth jhana, sukha has vanished. Another huge chunk of your manovijnana fallen away. Wow, this is really nice. And soon you get the understanding that all consciousness, I'm talking about manovijnana, jitta, is dukkha. To know is to suffer. Can you accept that? No way until you've experienced jhana. You can think you do. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I can understand this. That's what the Buddha said. But it's not powerful enough to actually to make you see things differently. So when you understand vijnana is suffering, or vijnana, it doesn't leave much else. In fact, it leaves nothing else. Nothing to hold on to. Nothing to take as not dukkha. Remember the difference between a Putuchana and an Arya is they don't fully understand the Four Noble Truths. That was such a powerful teaching when I first saw that. It said, if you totally understand the Four Noble Truths, then you're an Arya. And I thought, I understand the Four Noble Truths. I can recite them. I can even give a Dhamma talk on the Four Noble Truths. How come I'm not an Arya, I used to think. Because you haven't fully understood it. 99% is not enough. 99.99% is not enough. There's something in samsara you still think is sukha. Something you still take as permanent. Something which you still take as a self. Most of the stuff, yeah, it's not myself. But there's still a tiny bit left which stops you being an Arya. And it's usually either the will or the consciousness. That is what stops you being an Arya. When you get into these jhanas, you see, all the will cannot be me. It is suffering. You've seen it disappear. It's not permanent. All of your consciousness, the five consciousnesses are easy to see, they disappear. But now your sixth consciousness vanishing. That can't be me. And the more it vanishes, the less dukkha. There is suffering. Even the one who knows, the jitta, is suffering. It's not me. Now you can say you're an Arya, a Putuchana. You've seen it totally. There is nothing left. I always have great arguments with famous monks who still think that after enlightenment there is sanctional mind. Everything else vanishes, but the deathless jitta remains. That is crazy. That means that those famous monks are not Aryas. When I suggest this, that very famous monks who are household names in Thailand, well regarded as arahats, when I say they're Putucanas, I get big trouble. But I'm used to trouble. I don't mind saying that. If you have any idea that anything is permanent, a self, is happiness, you haven't seen the Dhamma yet. So the only way you can do this is get into these deep jhanas, and it's right in front of you, you can't miss it. Which is one of the reasons why people say, well, once you had a jhana, do you have to do vipassana then? You come out of jhana, okay, I'm now going to do vipassana. Remember, you don't do anything. There is no will which comes from you. There is will. Now, what you take to be will is not under your control. You don't do vipassana. Vipassana does you. It just happens. You come into these states, you can't miss it. You see that these things, there is no me. I don't own consciousness. I don't own my will. Will just comes with causes and conditions, dependent origination, that's all it is. There is no permanent entity in here. I've seen everything disappear. And also I've seen it so much suffering. To know vijnana is dukkha. Sankhara is dukkha. Not just some vijnana, all vijnana is dukkha. All sankharas, including chetana will, is dukkha. So why do you celebrate that? So after a while, when you realize it's all dukkha, you're not going to cherish anything. Which means that you're going to let go of a bunch of suffering. You're going to get nibbida towards the five khandhas, towards the one who knows the jitta, the will, everything. And that nibbida, which is a fascinating quality because it's negative, it's revulsion, I call it. I call it samsara's ejection seat. The whole of samsara unravels and then you don't get reborn again. There's nothing to get reborn. There's no reason to get reborn again. Why do you want to get reborn again? More suffering. Just like the Buddha said, if someone falls in a pile of shit and somebody drags them out, they'll never go back into that shit again. Once you've been dragged out, no way will you ever get reborn again. Just like diving into a pile of shit. Would any of you like to do that? But if you think it's not shit, it's beautiful, fragrant stuff, then of course you'll dive back in again. That's one of the reasons I'm going to finish off with one of my favorite little funny stories before I have the questions. At the end of my first book, Open the Door of Your Heart, I mentioned this wonderful story of these two monks. And they both died, one got reborn, the other one got reborn as a worm in a pile of shit, in a pile of cow dung. And the monk who was reborn in the heaven realm, enjoying himself, he thought, where's my friend? When we were monks before, we spent so much time together, he was my best friend, I wonder where he's been reborn. And having been reborn in the heaven realms, he had a few psychic powers, so he looked around all the heaven realms, couldn't find his friend there. Went into the human realm, because the human realm is a good birth, so he thought, my friend may have been reborn as a human being. Couldn't find his friend anywhere in the human realm. Surely he hasn't been reborn as an animal. And they searched all the animal realm, couldn't find his friend. Surely not one of those lower animals. And there the deva found his friend, reborn as a worm in a pile of cow dung. If that was your friend, you'd always go and help them. So the deva appeared in front of the pile of dung and called out to his friend the worm, hey worm, come out. In our previous lives we were monks together. Because of some bad karma, I don't know, you've been reborn in this pile of shit. I've been reborn in heaven. Come on, I can take you out. And at that the worm said, wait a moment. What is this heaven realm like? is there any dung up in heaven? Any cow shit? He said, of course not. You don't have dung and feces in heaven. If you ever get reborn in the heaven realms, there's no toilets because you don't do any of that sort of stuff. You don't have to queue up for the toilet like you do here. Do devas have to go into the toilet? That's a nice question for some thesis at university. There's no such stuff over there. So the worm said, if there's no dung up there, I'm not going. Because that was the worm's food. He loved that. He ate dung. It was his home. He said, dung is fragrant, dung is delicious. No dung, I'm not going. And the deva thought, look, this guy is attached to his dung. If I could only take him up to heaven and show him what it's like, he would never want to go back to this pile of shit again. So the deva decided to try and grab hold of the worm, pull him out of the pile of shit, and show him heaven. But because the worm did not want to go, and because, you know, if you're in a pile of dung, you've got all this slimy stuff all over you. So when he tried to pull him out, the worm wriggled and escaped, slithered away, and went deep in the pile of dung. Now the friendship is so strong. This heavenly being, not a human being, a heavenly being, so refined, put his hand right into the center of that shit to find his friend and pull him out. Just what you do for friendship is incredible. Many, many times the heavenly being tried to pull the worm out of the pile of shit. But because the worm didn't want to go, would always escape and go deeper into the dung. Till eventually the heavenly being had to leave the worm to his pile of dung. This morning, I've been trying to pull you out of your pile of shit. But you don't want to go, do you? Every time I almost get you out, you escape and wriggle back in again. That's so true. Every time I try to get you into jhanas, you always wriggle back in again. So you're all part of shit. Why? Because you think this body and the five senses are fragrant. It's nice and warm. It's my food. I love this body. I love the will. I love being calm. I want to know. So every time you try and pull you out, you wriggle back in again. But my job is just to pull you out far enough. You see what jhanas are. So, jeepers, this monk was right. I've been living in shit all my life, and I thought it was fragrant. I thought all these beautiful girls were fragrant. They are shit. I thought these guys, sex, movies, whatever, was wonderful. They're not. They are shit. But you can't know that until I take you out, or someone takes you out, into jhanas. And then, you can be free. Please excuse me for using such gross words. But samsara is gross. Suffering, it stinks. So sometimes you do need to use gross words to get people to realize they're living in a gross samsara. Thank you.